Welcome to the Cutter's Notch Podcast, a program created by Michael DeCamp, the author of Abandon Hope, a Cutter's Notch novel. Recorded in the Cutter's Notch Studios, this podcast is focused on all things creative, with special forays into books and matters of faith. Join Michael as he catches up with an author, a songwriter, a painter, a comedian, or anyone working or supporting a creative endeavor. So turn up the volume, listen, and catch up on what's happening in Cutter's Notch.
Well, hello everyone. Welcome to this edition of the Cutter's Notch podcast. As I record right now, it is Saturday, March 28th. This podcast will not drop until sometime in mid to early half of April. This is Michael DeCamp, your host. Our usual co-host is not with us today. We are in the midst of a global pandemic, and we're socially distanced.
We don't want her here.
she's off at her own place. And with me today is her lovely mother and my beautiful wife, Nancy DeCamp. Say hello, Nance.
Hello, Nance.
I had a feeling you would do that. Nancy and I's sense of humor entertains each other very consistently, but yes. Not necessarily everyone else. So
that's okay, since we're together 24/7 right now.
Yeah, we are. We have seen each other every waking hour for the last 2 weeks, I think. So very, very little separation. So it's actually, it's been fun for me. It's been good to be together.
Yep.
But we're going to start off a little bit. I usually share about a book I'm reading, but I'm the last 2 weeks, I just haven't had it in me to read. I'm still reading Dune, but I haven't read anything on Dune for a while. It's actually in the front seat of my car. I should probably get it out and get back on it a little bit. I had another book I was reading called Scrappy Church, which I read a book. It's a small little book, but it's a sequel to the book I read by the same author called, I think it's called Autopsy of a Dying Church or a Dead Church.
Encouraging works, yes. You're reading right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, my other part of my life is, it's focused on church related things, and we're trying to understand what's going on in today's culture. So that's, just kind of reading those things to kind of get a feel for it. But I haven't read either one of those for a couple of weeks now. So I'm kind of low on my book reading, which is unusual for me. I'm usually reading just about every day to some extent, but probably between all the stuff that's going on in the world and changes at work and other stuff, I've just kind of lost my focus on that. I need to get back in there. What are you reading, Nancy?
Actually, right now, I tend to have about 3 or 4 books going on, but I've been focusing on a book called Jesus Feminist by Sarah Bessie. And I have read it before. This time I'm going back through and just kind of taking some notes. Now, where everybody freaks out, like, oh my goodness, what's she going to do? Take over the church? No, I will say, I feel like it is very well written. And wherever your perspective is on women's involvement in church, there is a really strong sense of personal ownership of your faith and what that looks like. And I think she writes well. She writes in a narrative type fashion, so it's an easy read, but it's also, there's a lot of biblical research and examples that she poses for questions so that you can challenge your own personal faith. And I have found it to be something I've gained a lot from.
Oh, cool. Cool. Now, also a couple of announcements. Well, I guess sort of announcements, sort of updates on what's going on with the podcast and with my writing. My sequel to Abandon Hope is called Nozomi's Revenge. At least that's the working title right now. And it is actually finished. The story is finished. And it is in the, what's the word I've been using? The enhancement or the basically I've got it off with some beta readers and they're reading it and going to give me some feedback so I can do some modifications on it before I send it to my publisher, who will then have a professional edit done on it. And I will modify whatever the professional editor says, and then we'll be ready to publish it.
But exciting.
So I suspect it should be ready for consumption sometime in the later part of this year, probably in the fall, maybe a little earlier. Another new announcement is I'm going to actually publish a collection of 3 or 4 short stories related to Cutter's Notch, Indiana, a month or two before the sequel publishes.
Interesting.
So they're kind of in the line of the fantasy, supernatural, scary stuff related to the Abandoned Hope part of my story writing. So
does it kind of link the two books or just go off in different directions, the stories?
Doesn't really link too much to the first book. It does link a little bit to the second book. It gives a little bit of backstory on some of things that are mentioned in the second book. Mm-hmm. And then probably the short story I'm working on right now may become part of the third book. So we will see.
Okay.
We will see. We'll see how it evolves in my crazy, wild imagination.
Okay.
But, that's a little bit of announcement time. We also were going to have today. I was going to be Angela and I were going to be interviewing a couple of people. We've had to postpone that because of the shelter in place orders. A couple of weeks from now, we were going to take the Cutter's Notch studio on the road and interview a couple of people up in Muncie, Indiana. We've had to postpone that. The same thing. So in the middle of all this, we are going to be creatively creating. Is that a phrase?
I don't know.
Creatively creating some substitute material for the podcast. We can hopefully you'll still find it interesting and intriguing. May not have as many interviews, although this may drive me to figure out the technology to interview people via phone. So I've not done that yet. The equipment I have will do that. I've just not experimented with it. But I may have to.
Well, cool.
As we work through this. So this may drive me to learn some new things.
That's awesome.
So that's the cool thing about, I guess, being quarantined or sheltered in place. It forces you to do some new stuff.
Yep.
So that's where we're going to focus today. We're going to talk a little bit with Nancy about some creative cooking ideas. You know, when this thing all started, people attacked the grocery stores and bought all the toilet paper and cleaned out all the canned foods and much of the meats. And it was a little bit crazy at the grocery stores, and things are still a little bit bare. We didn't do that. So we've been living for the last 2 weeks off of the stuff that we have at home. And Nancy's done a very... amazing job keeping things with variety, keeping things good, tasted, really good tasting, and yet with lots of variety. And I very much appreciate that. So I thought we'd talk a little bit about that, how to use this time when you get into a time like this, how to creatively prepare meals so that you don't just keep opening cans of Chef Boyardee. Or what to do when your cans of Chef Boyardee run out.
Yeah, when there's none to be found.
So, we haven't had any. I haven't had Chef Boyardee in 20
like
years.
A nostalgic probably kind of thing
probably
right
30
now.
Years. Mm-hmm. I'm more of a chunky soup guy.
Yeah.
So, anyway, so that's why Nancy's here. So Nancy's going to talk a little bit about that. Nancy, what's your first thought here? I know you've got some notes. So where do you want to start with this conversation?
I would say, first of all, that I have always said that creativity is born out of lack of time or lack of money/resources. When you don't have the time or you don't have money or resources, you have to figure out how to make something happen. And so I think this opportunity has provided that. I know when the one time we did go to the store to get a few things that we needed, there were no chunky soups, and Mike really had a sad look on his face because he wasn't going to be able to have his chunky soup, you know?
Yeah. I looked over at the soup shelves, and there was like one can of Progresso.
Yeah.
It's like, and he's, wow.
He's like, feeling sad. Like, what am I going to do? And I'm thinking, okay, in the freezer at home, we have chicken tortilla soup. We have beef barley soup. We have lemon chicken and rice soup. We have a chili. We have vegetarian chili. We have plenty of soups at home.
This is all stuff that you've made from scratch, basically.
Yeah, made from scratch.
Frozen it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So, you know, if I was alone in a pandemic, I would probably starve to death. But I've got Nancy here to creatively keep me a little bit chubby. So,
well, and you know, I think one of the things I heard recently is that everyone has creativity in them, that it's a trait. Maybe some people have more than others, but it's there for survival's sake. Which, when I heard that, I thought, that makes sense.
Yeah. When you need to survive, your brain goes into high gear trying to figure out how to survive. So It's looking for the creative ways to get whatever it is you need at that particular time.
Right.
That's a good point. Good point. Mm-hmm. So, what are some creative things that you've messed around with here recently?
Recently, I will say the first thing I did was kind of take an inventory of what do we have. What meat do we have? What basic ingredients, you know, flour, sugar, butter, what have you, do we have? Eggs. So I first took an inventory to look, and then I started thinking about, well, out of those things, what could I make? And so creativity in food requires some practice. It also helps to have some basic understanding on how to fix things from scratch. And I've been blessed with a family of mother-in-law, grandmothers that were all really good cooks, and a mom who made me learn how to cook. Like when I was in high school, once a month, I had to prepare dinner for the family because there was an essence of timing that's involved, as well as knowing what ingredients and how to make things to have everything come out together. So I had that, but that was my first step, was to say, well, what do we have? Is there anything missing? Like, I was almost out of pepper. I was like, we really need to get some pepper if we're going to get through this.
So we did go to the store. We went to Kroger. Mm-hmm. And there was pepper on the shelf.
There was pepper on the shelf. Boy. There was no flour, and there hadn't been for a few weeks. So I got cake flour because I found out, that's the other thing, Google is your friend. Most food ingredients, a lot of food ingredients, you can substitute one for the other. And there was one box of cake flour on the shelf, no other type of flour, wheat flour, whatever kind of all-purpose flour you wanted, none was there. But I looked up that one cup of cake flour and 2 tablespoons is equal to 1 cup of all-purpose flour. Okay. So you can substitute things like that. You can substitute if you don't have buttermilk. Most of us don't carry buttermilk around, but there might be a recipe you need it. There's a ratio mixture of regular milk with lemon juice that creates what you can use as a substitute for buttermilk in a recipe.
Now, when you say regular milk, are you talking whole milk, or are you talking 2% or just any kind of milk?
Any kind. Skim, 2%, whole.
And lemon juice.
Lemon juice and milk.
Makes buttermilk. Yes. Or a buttermilk substitute. A substitute,
yes.
Okay. Well, interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, yeah, Google is some of these things I've learned over the years. Like, there's a basic, what I call, the chefs might call it a roux or a sauce or gravy. It's 4 basic ingredients. It's a fat, whether that's butter, Crisco, bacon fat, oil of some kind, flour.
And we're talking cooking oil, not motor oil.
Right. flour, some type of liquid, and then flavoring. So you melt the fat, melt the butter, add in the flour, and then your seasonings, and then gradually add in liquid, and you can make anywhere from an Alfredo sauce to a chicken gravy to all kinds of different things.
White gravies, brown gravies,
you know, I did
sausage gravy.
Yeah. And you know, I did hear one time that gravies and sauces were originally created to hide the taste of rotten meat or meat that was going bad so that they could still eat it. Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy. Yeah, it's something we can't really imagine in this this day and age.
Right. I promise all your stuff has been fresh and nothing has been spoiled.
I appreciate that. I do appreciate that. So, but you mentioned Google. You've used Google for a while now to come up with new recipes. Tell us about a little bit about that.
Well, I'm often, like I said, practice makes perfect. The other joke we have is about me looking at cooking books all the time while I'm doing other stuff. But
yeah, we once had this massive game of cards. It was me and one of my buddies against Nancy and another. I'm not sure who the other person was.
I think it was David.
David,
your nephew.
David, my nephew, and then there was a fourth person. I can't remember who it was, but. But you you were reading a cookbook while you were playing and you trounced us.
Yeah. So the joke was I couldn't ever read a cookbook when we were playing cards because, you know, there were secrets there for.
Yeah. I'm not sure. It's just like a magical thing or something.
But. Yeah. But lately I've gotten into over the last couple of years, I just started pulling up Google and I'll type in what's the world's best Salisbury steak recipe, world's best chocolate pie recipe, whatever it is I'm wanting to fix to compare it to recipe books and things that I have. And I will tell you every single one I have tried has been great.
Wow.
Tell us, that's a tip.
Well, I've experienced most of those, but give us a couple of them, two or three of them that you've found. Just tell us a little bit about it.
Well, one I made the other day, I know we were having kind of a sad day, so we felt like we needed a little bit of comfort food. So I know how to fix brownies from scratch, but the recipe that I use, I knew I didn't have a couple of ingredients and I looked up some substitutions and then I just Googled world's best brownies with chocolate chips in them because I knew I had using chocolate chips. And so I made us a small pan of these brownies and they're really good, really good.
Well, I did enjoy them. I didn't realize that those were a world's best recipe.
They were. And even specifying specific ingredients I want to use. There are websites out there too that you can throw in ingredients like things that you have at home and it will provide you some recipes.
Really? Do you have an example?
I don't know. No, I don't know it often. I get Google websites that have.
Google is your friend. Google, if you're out there listening, send us some sponsorship money here. We're giving you a plug. But tell us, because of the brownie thing, what else have you done?
The other thing of all my cooking, and I often tell people I'm not a small person and I'm not small because I tend to eat a lot. I cook well. And I'm, don't mean to sound prideful on that, but it tastes good. So we eat.
I'll attest to that.
But anyways, aside from that, one thing I've never been good at is banana bread. I've done all kinds of baking and all kinds of stuff in cookies, pastries, cakes, what have you. But banana bread just has always eluded me until about a year and a half ago. I searched world's best banana bread and I found this recipe and made it. And one of the key different ingredients, like instead of just using a milk and butter, it used sour cream in the recipe. And for some reason, I don't know if this is the denseness of it, of the dairy, but it does. It makes really good banana bread. So I can make banana bread now.
Wow. Wow. So Google helped you to improve your skills.
Yes.
Now, one of the things I think you found on Google that I just love and told you could just make it anytime you wanted to, but we rarely have it because I would probably balloon out to about twice my normal size. Something in the crock pot with chicken and...
I didn't get that from Google. Actually, a friend I worked with.
All right.
Emily Jones, if you're ever out there and hear me, she's an accounting professor at Franklin University.
Jones, yeah.
We played volleyball together for years, but it's a chicken Alfredo lasagna and you make it in the crock pot. That's the other thing I'm known for is I'm a crock pot queen. I have about seven of them and I have been known to use them all at the same time.
Seven crock pots.
Yes.
Not crack pots.
No, not crack pots.
This is an inside joke. When Nancy and I first got married back in the dark ages, we didn't open all of our wedding gifts before we went on honeymoon. But when we came back, we opened them and we got about three or four crock pots.
Mm-hmm.
But we had a little old lady that was a family friend who lived next door to Nancy's folks. That was, she was there with us when we were opening them, and she kept calling them crackpots.
Yeah, so, look, you got another crackpot.
So anyway, that's our inside joke. So this chicken, what's it called? Chicken Alfredo lasagna in a crock pot.
Yes. You can fix regular lasagna in the crock pot. I found that out. You can do baked potatoes. You can even do cakes and stuff in the crock. I've not really done baked goods in the crock pot yet, but you can do a lot there.
Well, that's impressive. But I got to tell you, that chicken lasagna, man,
it's good.
It's to die for.
The thing I love about crock pots is like when you prep it, you put it in there and you walk away and live your life.
Just prep and put it in and then you can forget about it for a few hours until you're ready to consume it.
Yep.
So,
yep.
Yeah, I think that first time you made that, you put it all together before we left for church and then
came home and voila.
We had guests over and there was no leftovers. I was kind of bummed by that, but it was really, really good. So what other tips do you have for us?
I think that you need to learn, just think of balance and variety. And like when I said inventory, you have to have an awareness of what you have or awareness of what you need. And then I'm also known to, there's a recipe you really like, you know, it's just Mike and I that live here now, but I'll still make the full family size and then freeze, whether it's in smaller portions that I can grab and take to lunch. Cause usually I will pack my lunch when I go into the office, back when I used to do that. but I'll go ahead or have it in make it into like two separate pans. Like if I made regular lasagna, make it in two small pans and one goes in the freezer and one's for us to consume. And then that can be used to, you know, take to somebody who's in need or for us to eat at a later time. So I think find the recipes, the things you like, you're comfortable with, practice. And it's not always going to turn out well. But I will say it doesn't have to be elaborate. Simple works. Salt and pepper alone are your friend.
Yeah. Salt and pepper are the kind of the core spices, right? So
that,
to the human palate, that really makes a big difference. Those two spices right there.
Yeah.
And the practice point, I think, is reasonable for any person who is interested in a creative endeavor. Anything you do, when you first start to do it, you're probably not going to be a virtuoso. You know, there's not that many people who are. It's rare to have a genuine genius who can just sit down and play the piano right from the get-go.
Correct.
Or pick up a violin and be able to crank it out. Usually you sound terrible initially until you practice.
Right.
Same with writing. You know, if you sit down in your first time of trying to write something and you think you're going to crank out a novel, it's going to be a disaster. Usually.
Right.
It takes practice to get good at it. And even great authors are continually honing their craft. And I think it's true when it comes to food and cooking. Sometimes people think, well, I'm a terrible cook. Well, yeah, but you need to practice a little bit.
Well, and one nice thing or helpful thing on when you research a recipe online, a lot of times people will have videos of them making it. So you can watch, like I wanted a year ago, we were coming up St. Patrick's Day and I wanted to make traditional Irish scones. I really like scones. And I looked up this recipe and the Irish lady did a little video on it. So I really saw what it was, what she was talking about. And that was very helpful. And that's, you know, and some of the things I learned from your mom, it was us doing it together, me watching her or her watching me try to do some of those recipes that helped me understand. Because the most frustrating part I know for people who rely on recipes is when someone says, well, I don't really measure. I just kind of look at it or I just taste it and figure it out. Because some people are like, no, I want to know. It's one cup of this, two cups of that, a teaspoon of that. When you cook from scratch where you don't measure, you have to be able to see like the consistency of what something's supposed to look like and smell like or what have you to know. And that takes practice, but being able to view it, like watching a video or someone else do it is very helpful.
You know, you were mentioning my mom and doing things from taste. Mm-hmm. For those of you out there in the listening world, my mom had a recipe. Well, I shouldn't say she had a recipe. It was all in her head, but it's been passed down through our family for a while now. And it's basically a potato soup, but she had no written recipe for it. So when I got married to Nancy, I really wanted Nancy to learn how to make that soup. And I think Nancy asked mom if she had the recipe for it.
Yeah.
And what would my mom say?
Nope. So she had to go with it.
They had to both get in the kitchen together and they had to, basically my mom taught her how to make this potato soup, which is really a rich, thick potato soup.
Mm-hmm. It's more like a chowder almost.
Yeah, almost too, a chowder. Yeah. There's no meat in it. There's eggs in it, eggs and flour and onion and butter and milk.
Very few potato. And if it was the one thing she would tell me too, you know, ours was really rich with the butter and the milk, but back in the Depression days, a lot of times it was just water.
Yeah. I think the recipe started out with my grandmother and it was basically one potato and a pot of water.
Yeah.
And they would add flavoring. But over the years it developed into this really rich, milky, buttery, delicious. We're going to need some of that.
We're going to need some potato soup.
Yeah, we're going to need some potato soup soon. But that was done by taste. So she would.
Right. I got in trouble with her too when I was trying to make it.
Well, tell us about that.
Well, one of the things in this particular potato soup, we have things in it called, the family calls them Ripley's.
That comes from my dad.
Was that your dad that came up with the Ripley's?
They were riblets originally. That's what my mom always called them.
Well, they're like riblets. Little things. Or not a noodle, not flat, but like a little tiny crumbly kind of dumpling, which helps thicken the soup. And when you make it first, you get the potatoes and onion and water going. And then while that's kind of cooking, you put flour, salt and pepper and eggs together, again, not measured out. And then you mix that to make these kind of little tiny ripply kind of dumplings. Uh-huh. And she wanted me to do it with my hands, like mix it with my hands. But at that point in time, I was wearing my wedding ring. And that day, my fingers were kind of swollen. So it was tight. So it wasn't something I could easily pull off. And it has a lot of grooves in it. And I didn't want to get the flour and the egg and everything in that ring. And so I was wanting to use a spoon. But no, she wanted me to use my hands to get, obviously, wash your hands, as everybody should.
Yes.
But she wanted me my hands in there to make these Ripley's. And so we had I'm like, well, I know that that's an optimal way, but why can't we do it this way?
And, trying to tell my mom that my mom was kind of set in her ways in some ways. Would you say that?
She was a strong woman.
And so are you. So it was like an immovable force and an immovable object and an unstoppable force. Luckily, I wasn't there that day. I don't think I was somewhere. I fled the kitchen.
It wasn't a bad scenario, but it was definitely a, you know, as iron sharpens iron's moment.
You found a truce and the soup was made. So
it's gotten better over time, right? Because when I first started making it, there would be times it was good and times it was like, it's okay. You know,
now it's pretty much awesome every time. So I'm getting hungry for it for sure. So, and yeah, the other weird thing that the DeCamps always did is they would make this really delicious stuff. It would come to the table and then we take a little bit of vinegar and put a little vinegar in
on the soup. Yeah.
On the soup while it's in the bowl.
I've not done that yet.
I'm not sure why I do that, but it just adds a touch of a flavor that, I just grew to love.
It's funny too. Cause when you say that, it's like, sometimes we just need to ask why.
Yeah.
Why do you do that? There's always the joke I've always heard about the newlywed who was making a ham and she cut off both ends and put it in a pan. And the husband was like, so why do you do that? He goes, well, I don't know. My mom always did it that way. That's how she made a ham. So she asked her mom and mom was like, well, I don't know. That's how grandma always do it. So that's how I learned. And they went to grandma and said, grandma, why'd you always cut off both the ends of the ham? And she was like, well, I never had a pan big enough for a full ham. So, you know, it was like useless why they were doing it, but they just
always did it that way. So that's how we always do it. Yeah. And the meaning is lost over time.
Right.
So
right.
That's pretty awesome. But you know, it's interesting though, in this time of, stress mm-hmm. and shortages. And do you have a secret recipe? Can you Google world's best toilet paper or something like that?
I'm sure it's out there.
People have been hoarding toilet paper, so I don't know that we can make that from scratch. Although I do have a whole bunch of books that
start with the ones you like least first.
Yeah. I'll rip the pages out of the ones I don't like, and we'll start using that until we can get toilet paper back in the grocery stores. But the potato soup started in the Depression era.
Right.
And so you learn to make do with what you've got and make it stretch.
Well, that's like when we were at the one time we went to the store, and I knew I would be running out of, oil. I have a nice bottle of olive oil, but I knew I'd be running out of oil or some, a grease kind of substitute. And a lot of times I'll keep just a small little can of Crisco in the house because you use that a lot for pie pastries or some baking goods. Well, when I was at the store, they had a little can, but I saw the big one and I was like, all right, I'm getting the big one. That's going to last me a long time and that can get us through about anything.
Well, when I was a kid, Crisco was the staple. I mean, that's what we used to cook. In fact, in my house, when I was a kid, everything was fried. If it wasn't fried, it probably wasn't made by the DeCamps.
That's why you were giving me grief the other day, because I have a tendency, like I have a pan that's a griddle, kind of like a grill. And so I'll lightly spray it with oil so the meat doesn't stick on it, but I'll cook it on top of the stove there. And then I also have a cast iron skillet that I've used. I've gone back to my cast iron stuff because I found that there's a certain amount I read somewhere. Who knows if it's, maybe it's on Facebook and it's not true or whatever, but using the cast iron, there's a certain amount of iron that seeps into the food, which is good. It also tends to hold some seasoning, which enhances the food that you cook into a cast iron skillet. But at any rate, I digress. So a lot of times when I'm cooking meat, I don't want it to dry out. Say I'm going to cook some chicken breasts on that griddle. I'll spray it so it doesn't stick, but there's no fat there. And at a certain point in the cooking, I can tell that the chicken breast is starting to dry out, and I'll pour just a little bit of water in that skillet griddle. And you've been giving me grief about this for years. What do you do that for? What do you do that? And I think we finally got to the source of why you were giving me grief on it the other day.
But yeah, because if you're a person out there who likes to fry their stuff in some oil, and it's obvious that there's a layer of oil that's there. Pouring water in that is not a good idea.
Not a good idea.
It will splatter everywhere and you could potentially cause a fire.
Yep.
So, but in your situation,
in the bottom. And that's the same thing with, I think I did some breakfast sausages the other day. You are supposed to put them in a clean, cool skillet, no oil. You read the instructions on the little meat package.
Well, a lot of meats create their own oil.
Right.
Like I usually, if I fried a hamburger in a skillet, mm-hmm. which is not optimum, but it, as a kid, that's what we did. I never put oil in that. We didn't put Crisco in the skillet.
Did you guys
put
salt in it the way that I?
No. No, we don't.
That's one thing my mom taught me for hamburgers. Like if you're going to fry hamburgers in a cast iron skillet, you just coat the bottom of the pan with a light layer of salt, and that seasons the meat while keeping the meat from sticking to the skillet.
And I got to tell you, it really, I like it probably too much. And I'm sure that my doctor is not a fan of all the salt.
Not that often though.
We won't tell him about that. So, in my family on South Hackley Street in Muncie, Indiana, we typically would put a big dollop of Crisco in the skillet mm-hmm. and let it melt down. And then what I lived off of when I was in high school was cans of whole kernel corn and Pete's Pride pork fritters. And I would I'd put those pork fritters in that grease and fry them up.
And sometimes you do need some grease and such, but especially in this situation, you go to the stores and those convenience foods are not there.
Yeah. Yeah. Right
the
now.
The beefaroni's not there. The canned vegetables isn't there. The chunky soup isn't there.
And that's why we're having this conversation, because the stuff that's the easy stuff has all been taken by the hoarders.
But, you know, cooking from scratch is easy and it's so much more healthy. You're not getting any extra preservatives. It's
except for all that salt in a skillet.
If you choose, but you're controlling. You can control
that, yes.
And so it really, really is easy. And I've even bought, I love to buy fresh spinach. I like spinach a lot. I'll have fresh spinach. If I haven't had a chance to turn it into a salad and I can see, okay, it's about the date I need to start using it, I'll throw it into a pan and cook it up, and then you can freeze it. And
what do we have? Preserved. We had spinach in something the other day. Tell us about that one. That little, it was a quinoa, I think.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I'd made up a quinoa, and like I said, I tend to make up a full batch of things when I do it. So I'd made some quinoa for a recipe. And
by the way, I'm not a huge fan of quinoa, but this was awesome. So go ahead. Well,
thanks. So I had leftover quinoa. And if you've ever tasted quinoa, it's kind of bland, kind of plain like rice.
Which is why I'm not usually a fan of it.
Right. So I had a little bit of fresh spinach that I'm like, you know what, this is going to go bad. So I threw just a little bit of oil in the olive oil in the skillet with some minced garlic and the fresh spinach. And I cooked the spinach down, and then I went to the quinoa, threw that in there. So it was kind of stir frying. And then I did the whole roux sauce gravy thing. I put, you know, a little bit, one tablespoon of like butter, and I use real butter. Don't use margarine. You can use margarine for your baking. Don't use it for, because baking is going to be bad for you anyways, but real butter tastes better too. A little butter. I put just a tablespoon or two of, no, I didn't even use the flour. Instead of flour, I used Parmesan cheese as my flour kind of thickening ingredient. And then just a little bit of milk, which is essentially an Alfredo sauce, is garlic with the butter, Parmesan cheese, and the milk. And then like, sometimes you can add some garlic salt, but then just a pinch of nutmeg at the end.
Did you mix all this, the roux stuff or the gravy stuff before you put it in the quinoa, or was that, did you mix it into the quinoa when you were doing it?
For people who've not done it, I would recommend doing the sauce separate and then pouring it in. But because I'm comfortable in that area of cooking, I just threw the butter in there. Plus I wanted to make sure, I didn't want a full sauce. I just wanted enough to create a light flavoring. Because I didn't want to destroy the health effects of the spinach and the quinoa completely.
Well, I was just thinking that maybe the starch from the, because there's some starch in the quinoa, that some of the starch from the quinoa would have added some of the thickening that you would normally
get. But Alfredo, you don't have to use flour. You can just use the cheese. So it does serve as a basic ingredient. So yeah, I baked some chicken breasts, and then I made this quinoa spinach mixture and then laid this chicken breast on top of that. And then we had some cooked carrots, I think, that day.
Yeah. My favorite thing that day was the quinoa with the spinach and the sauce in it. Yeah. So that was really good. So anything else, any other tips or anything that you want to share before we start to wind down,
I just keep it simple and then try to imitate things. And like I said, I'm a crock pot queen. So I think about, easy things are, you can throw chicken or a pork roast in a crock pot, throw a jar of salsa on it, that alone, or sometimes I'll use like a packet or half a packet of taco seasoning, let it cook all day and then shred it. And you have like a spicy meat that you can use for salads, burritos, casseroles, whatever you want. I'll do a lot of beef in the crock pot because the crock pot just makes it tender. I had a couple of steaks in the freezer. And so yesterday, and they're dense. And so they're not as tender and easy, especially once they've been frozen. So I threw a couple of steaks in the crock pot with some salt and pepper and a little bit of sliced onion and let it cook all day. Then I ended up making, with some dried up porcini mushrooms and beef broth, another roux sauce with those cut up the steak, and then some of the leftover noodles that I had from another meal, mixed it all together. So it was kind of like a stroganoff. So if you see something done one way, even if you're fixing chicken tenders and you're baking them or cooking them on top of the stove where you put them in salt and pepper and flour or some kind of I don't know, breadcrumbs kind of thing. You could do that with eggplant. So you could, you know, create kind of a light crust and bake it, and all of a sudden add a little sauce and mozzarella and you have a parmesan. So keep things simple, but also try to look at what you can recreate everywhere and just investigate.
Yeah, there you go. And so if you have any questions on any of the things that we talked about today with regards to cooking in a pandemic, you can email them to me at authormichaeldecamp@gmail.com.
Sure.
And I will, I'll get Nancy to answer them. So,
yeah, I've always said on the food show, and I forget, I'm sorry, which one it is, where they give you one ingredient and you have to come up with a 5-course meal with that ingredient throughout.
And it's got to be in everything.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, I can do it. Give me a Twizzler. You're going to have a 5-course gourmet meal. That's one thing I can do. There's a lot of things I cannot do. So please don't assume that I'm totally prideful in every area of my life, but I am confident when it comes to creative cooking.
Very, very good. All right. You told me you had a couple of questions.
I did.
Let's hear them. We're going to do that in lieu of the random question box today. So
the first one I thought of relates to food and being kind of quarantined and not able to get all the things you would always like. What food item would you not want to live without?
Yeah, a basic item or a food?
It could be whatever.
Oh, man.
See, for me, it's easy. I know two things. If I had to live without them, I could, because we can live without most things, right? But two things that I'm like, oh, they just enhance my life so much when it comes to food.
Okay. I bet I can guess one of them. Green beans?
No.
No?
Although they'd probably have to say three things, because I do love my green beans.
Green beans would be up there.
Yeah.
Okay.
For me, it's strawberries. Love strawberries. And the other, probably more essential to my life, is peanut butter.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Do you know, I probably have just a teaspoonful almost every day.
Really?
And I'm out right now.
Which is, you're having peanut butter withdrawals.
Peanut butter withdrawals. I'll be fine without it. But I just, when I was a little girl, I had three older brothers. And the story goes, we went to the doctor for checkups or whatever. And the boys were like trying to tattle on me to the doctor. And they were like, all she eats all the time is peanut butter. And the doctor was like, that's okay. Peanut butter's okay for her.
It's good. It's actually good for you in moderation.
Right. Exactly. Moderation. Absolutely.
Well, I'm sorry, but green beans, strawberries, and peanut butter.
You wouldn't miss?
Well, I would miss them, but I wouldn't say that I couldn't live without them.
I can live without them.
I think probably potatoes. I would have a hard time living without potatoes, although I try not to eat them very much, mm-hmm. because the starch is just bad for your waistline, right?
Right.
It can be. High starchy carbs. Mm-hmm. But there's so many different ways of eating a potato that I love.
Yeah.
From baked potatoes to French fries to fried potatoes,
mashed potatoes, all gratin potatoes.
Yeah. So potato soup, yeah. Which we're going to need to have some of that. that's probably one. Oh man, I don't know. Probably I'm a carnivore. So, probably beef. The various types of beef.
I don't eat that much beef anymore.
I still like it though. I went to a doctor a few years ago, and he looked at me, he goes, all right, Mike, cause I'm carrying too much weight. I still am. But he looked at me, he goes, all right, fish, chicken, and vegetables. Got it. And, I 1 year I tried really, really hard to only eat fish and chicken or poultry.
Yeah.
For the year, and did really pretty good.
You did.
But, I don't know that I could go my whole life and not have beef.
I really like beef
in its various forms.
I didn't think that I could, but over this last couple of years where I have it very rarely or very limited amounts, I found like, yeah, I could do without. I really think I could even go vegetarian if I didn't have to cook for you. So, some of the animal meat products.
I'll tell you what, you can have all the peanut butter you want as long as you let me have beef.
That's the other thing. Since I'm out of peanut butter, we do have a big thing of nuts. So I'm like, do I make some homemade peanut butter this weekend?
It's funny. We got a jar of honey roasted nuts, and she's talking a variety of nuts in there too. It's not just peanuts, but she's talking about making some homemade nut butter out of that.
Got so almond butter.
I'd be willing to give it a shot. Be willing to give it a shot. Well, folks, thank you out there for listening to our improvised podcast discussion today. Actually, it was kind of fun. I hope you enjoyed it. If you're hungry out there, go ahead and stop for lunch. And if you're interested in any of these things, you got any questions, like I said, you can email me at authormicheldecamp@gmail.com. And if it's related to the food stuff, I'll have Nancy give me the answer and I'll forward it back to you.
I do know a lot of things that I shared are not always healthy, but we're talking about survival right now.
We're surviving through a pandemic. So with that, hopefully Angela will be able to join us again soon and we'll have her back on here. She would want you to leave us a review. So if you're listening out there in the podcast world, if you could give us a review on whatever format that you're listening to us on, that would be very much appreciated. And until next time, we will catch you again on the next Cutter's Notch podcast.
The Cutter's Notch podcast can be found through any podcast listing provider. New episodes will drop approximately twice per month. Connect with Michael at the following email address, authormicheldecamp@gmail.com. Again, that's authormicheldecamp@gmail.com. Abandon Hope, a Cutter's Notch novel, can be purchased as an ebook, paperback, or hardcover through any bookstore, both online and local. Get your copy and start your own Cutter's Notch adventure today.